Welcome to the Minibate Gang Podcast, episode 132. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim, Mod Squad Elliot.
And I'm here.
Phil, humidity killed my afro, Wilson.
I mean, he's got my favorite Link quote.
There you go.
The ghetto. It's a bad scene, man. I've been there.
And unfortunately, Graham, far out, thickens, can't be here. Now, you may notice this is our 70s theme because last week was 60s with Austin Powers. So.
Well, this is a 70s theme?
Don't you think so? All right. Well, maybe not.
I don't know.
All right.
It's not disco, right?
It is. So what are the biggest stories this week? Phil, what do you think was the top?
Well, I think, you know, we talked about this before we started the podcast, you know, because we actually do talk about this podcast.
Don't tell our secrets. You're telling our secrets.
Even though it may not sound like it on a regular basis.
Like we don't plan. Right.
No. But, you know, obviously, I thought there were a lot of big stories on the national front. Probably not so much on the local because it is a little bit slower time for us. But on the national front, I think the two big things were the fact that the end of manned space exploration for the U.S., at least for the time being, end of manned space flights. I think we're still doing exploration, but we're doing it with other countries. And then all the Apple news, obviously.
Yeah.
So, I mean, those were the two. I guess I'm an idealist in the fact that I think that the manned space program changes. It's the biggest story. But that's just me.
Well, I would somewhat agree with you because my son and I watched the last launch, and I woke him up and said, "Come on down," because you know he usually sleeps till noon on days he doesn't work. But so we watched it because it was a big deal. It was a big deal to see that last launch of that shuttle.
Let's remind everybody that your son is only
16.
16, not. Like 23. So
right.
Tim, what do you think about
NASA? about the space? It's a passing of something that we all grew up with. I remember, you know, the man on the moon that just celebrated 40 years now. Yeah. A couple of days ago. So yeah, we all grew up with the space race and it's sad to kind of see it end this way with, you know, kind of a really old program that probably should have been renewed, you know, a decade or more ago.
Right.
But for one reason or another, they sort of kept it around, until now. So hopefully we'll see some, continued efforts. I'm sure that we won't, you know, in the near term though, because the economy is so bad, but right. When things get better, maybe they'll carve out a little money to go back to the moon or something.
Well, you know, when I looked at this, I was thinking this morning, you know what, let's take a look at some of the things that were made possible because of the space program. It's not necessarily, or they were accelerated because of the space program, some innovations and things like that.
GPS,
satellite programming.
Right.
You would not be able to watch, the Royal Wedding for God's sakes without satellite, the ability to deliver via satellite.
Well, and global communications that don't require, undersea cables everywhere.
Some more specific stuff, cordless tools.
Cool.
That a computer program was actually designed to help the drill's motor to use as little power as possible. So that was sort of an outgrowth. Thanks, Black & Decker's got NASA to thank for that.
Lasers.
Lasers.
That's right. Another big one. Virtual reality is another one.
Mm-hmm. Smoke detectors.
Ooh.
Right?
That's important when you're in space. That's for sure.
They needed that for Skylab, so that happened in the 70s. Sunglasses. You can thank NASA for the blue blocker sunglasses ads that used to be on the TV. Video stabilization for cameras.
Nice.
Barcoding.
Really?
It was originally developed to help NASA keep track of all of their parts.
So maybe QR codes could owe a little bit to the space
program. Maybe a little bit to that. Okay. Obviously, thermal gloves and boots. And what's probably the most important?
I'm Tang. Waiting.
Tang. You're exactly yeah, right. Tang.
That's what I was going to say. Oh, you left out the best part of it.
But actually, Tang wasn't developed by NASA. So it was actually it was actually around before the Mercury space flights. And it was made by General Foods. Didn't sell very well until they decided to put it on the Mercury flights. Do you know why they decided to put it on the Mercury flights?
Tell us, Phil.
I love the internet.
Gotta be payoffs, right?
No. Actually, because the system that produces water within the capsule was a byproduct of the technology, but the water didn't taste very good. So they just added Tang to it to help.
Oh, well, that's practical. Make it go.
So there you go. I remember Tang on every trip we ever took. Obviously, we didn't go to space, but when we went to the Yellowstone, boy, there was Tang on board.
Wow. Well, but I want to know where the hell my holodeck and replicator is, or at least Rosie the robot from the Jetsons.
Well, you know, if you think about it, the virtual reality is a little bit of a holodeck
for the mind. Okay.
Yeah,
it's a little bit
of a holodeck deal. Yeah. And of course, we always have to talk about dildonics when we talk about virtual reality. And
teledildonics.
Teledildonics.
That's right.
Brother.
Oh, man.
This is a family podcast.
You commented, I think, last time, Tim, that we always seem to bring that subject up. So I just felt like we had to bring it up now. So,
jeez.
Well, every woman listening to this podcast, and we have numerous of them, is cringing right now about the sexist stuff going on. And we've just got to not do that. So I just, by the way, I got a great joke for you. Okay. I'm not going to do that.
This is about teledildonics. How is that not women friendly?
Let's just not go there. Tim, let's segue to you, pal. What about
it's a joke.
I know. Tim, what do you think was the number one story this week?
I think it was the $69 iPad 2 at Sears.
Oh, yeah. Wasn't that hilarious? So yeah. Tell us about that.
Sorry, I missed that.
Well, someone on their website put in the wrong price. So it was like discounted almost $700. It wasn't even the cheap one. It was like one of the more expensive ones. It should have been like $769 or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
it was $69 and some people bought them and, you know, obviously, well, I think a few people actually got them for that price, but a lot of orders were canceled. So people were upset.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. Well,
yeah. I was going to try to, anybody have any idea how many were actually sold or would try to be sold at that price? And how would you stumble across that? Would you just,
I guess you'd be on the Sears website and all of a sudden you see, hey, wait a minute, there's an iPad 2 and they're $69.
I suppose.
You know?
Yeah.
You know? I would certainly buy it if I
wouldn't. I would be going to Sears to check out the prices on.
It's true. I didn't even know they sold iPads, actually. But apparently this was their marketplace program where they have third-party sellers. So, you know, that was one of the things. And it just was funny because it got a lot of coverage. And I'm not sure why. Well, I guess it's just because it's just a funny pricing mistake.
Well, I would say that for me, that the number one story was Apple's third quarter results.
Yeah. Could you imagine if they sold iPads for $69, what their third quarter results would have been?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, they sold 139 million iPads or something instead of, I think they've sold 30 million so far.
Yeah. No, 20. No. Yeah. Yeah. 28 million or so. Yeah. You're right. You're right.
Yeah.
To date.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, the thing that amazes me is, they sold 20 million iPhones and, you know, a lot of people are saying, well, okay, what are they going to do next? Because, you know, the iPod used to be that and now it's dwindling and so on. It's like, come on. But they sold over 9 million iPads in the quarter. But when you look at the year-over-year growth in a company this size growing that fast, you know, revenue up 82%. Year over year. I mean, it's just like, oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, how can a company that's, do a $28 billion quarter.
What's the stock trading at right now, guys?
Well, not I don't
since
know
I right don't, this since minute. I don't own any.
It's about 390. Mm-hmm. And
there's how low did it get in the worst years for them?
It was less than $10.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And we put some in a college fund, and I think it was $12.
Yeah. Well, during the crash, in December of 08, it was in the 80s. Because we were looking at selling some, and I just said, no, let's bite the bullet and hang on to it. And God, thank God we did. Oh, man.
Well, it was a good quarter. There's no doubt about
good
that.
Good quarter. Yeah.
Good quarter.
New Macs. And unfortunately, four and a half, five months ago, I bought a MacBook Air 11-inch, and now I wish I had the new one. So,
if any, been there, done that, my
I
friend.
I know. Yeah.
Craigslist.
Yeah, I know. Mac OS X Lion. Have you guys, I've updated two machines with it. And unfortunately, I updated my main one yesterday and then realized last night after spending 3 hours downloading new drivers and getting everything working for the audio for this podcast. Stupidly. Everything's working great.
I of course said, no problem. I got a backup. I back up every day. I've got a backup of my all of my files. So I went ahead and installed Lion and totally spaced off that I'm running some PowerPC software.
Really?
And it's not supported. Rosetta's not supported anymore.
So how's that working for you, Phil?
Well, I got a big old this program doesn't work symbol on my.
Bummer.
Yeah, what are you gonna do? But I thought about stepping back to Snow Leopard, but screw it. I'll just update the programs. It's time to update them anyway. So
yeah.
I mean, PowerPC's been around for how long? Long time. Long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Decade.
Well, what I find interesting is, there's been in all the previews of OS X Lion, you could see the influences of the iOS. With Launchpad specifically, but now with the trackpad swiping and so forth that are very analogous to swiping on a touchpad on a screen, you can see how the two are going to come together. And it's just amazing to me to see some of the vitriol from people like Dan Gilmore, who said he's not going to buy any more Macs, and that Apple's arrogant in terms of making these changes and so forth. It's just like, hello. I mean, that's really? Why we're still using mice and desktops, because, we've basically trained most of the planet on how to work that. And so changing interfaces and moving toward an easier to use human interface is going to take time, and it's not going to happen overnight. But
well, it's interesting that you say that, because, the first thing I did when I loaded Lion was have to, hop in and change the mouse settings so I could, instead of, because I use a mouse, and a keyboard, since I share between two computers. So I obviously had to change that swiping motion, because the wheel, when you push the wheel up, the screen goes down, et cetera. So it was just a quick little change, but it's interesting that was the biggest thing I noticed right away. You're right. It's this continuing movement of bringing all the OSs together and having them basically act the same from mobile to desktop.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I don't think it's a good thing, and that's why I'm going to stay on Snow Leopard for quite a while, I think.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I like the way that this works. I understand how it works, and it was just too much of a difference for me. And plus, not all my apps are updated, are supporting Lion yet, so I was going to wait for that anyway. But the more I look at it, the more it just looks like, well, I'm happy with where I'm at, so I think I'm going to stay here.
Well, one of the great appeals to this was that it was just $29. The downside is it really cost me about $429.
Well, because of your time.
I had to update the software.
Oh.
Yeah, all your old software. Yeah.
Well, but crap. But see, here's my thing I really like it. And the other thing is that it's actually smaller. So I gained hard drive space back. I don't know what they took out and so on, but the only disconcerting thing, and this gets a little geeky for those listening, but you have your user folder, and inside your user folder, you have a library folder, which contain your preferences and so forth for you as a user. That's hidden now. And Apple also hid a couple of other things. So as a consequence, I did not deactivate Adobe InDesign on my MacBook Air. And when I went to boot it up, it said, hey, you've already got this running on two machines. That's all you get. And so I actually had to call Adobe Tech Support and spend time with them so that they could deactivate my one machine and then allow me to reactivate it. And it's because the place that they put the receipt got hidden by the new OS. Now, one would think Adobe should have had their act together and run an updater. But
did you just say Adobe should have their act together?
Yes, I did. Oh, I did say that.
Kind of ironic.
But it's stuff like, you know, the new Safari 5.1 is screaming fast. And I'm really, I love all the new features. You know, the only thing is, though, is with all the new stuff, Google Plus and all the different stuff that we're doing with Google Apps and that I'm doing for clients with Google Apps and now with a new OS, my head's going to blow up. So if you guys see stuff laying all over, you'll go, that looks like Borsch's head.
The little mushroom cloud.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it's just, you know, there's just so much to learn and to get fluent at. But so, Tim, you had mentioned something about the story about Apple buying Hulu, and I was thinking about our pal Darren Klum, who's launching Cram Worldwide, which is a device which allow movie studios to download content, and also you can download it from the net and so forth. And of course, I think about Apple buying Hulu affecting him. But what are your thoughts about that? Do you think that's a good thing?
Well, they do need more content on the Apple TV, and buying Hulu would certainly give them that. But it doesn't seem to me like it's a strategic move for them in that sense. It seems more like they just don't want Google to buy them. Because if Google bought Hulu, that I think that would be a big problem for Apple. Well, it'd be a big problem for everybody.
Yeah.
But so, you know, the Microsoft has been rumored as well to be looking at Hulu too. So it'll be interesting to see who picks them up.
Huh.
A lot of people think they're the odd man out and that they don't have a sustainable business model. So, but we'll see, because Netflix is certainly on a tear.
Yeah, definitely. Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens. Well, you know, the thing about video is I've been watching some of the things that Google has been doing. So for anyone listening that uses YouTube, for example, you really need to go in and look at some of the new interface stuff that Google is doing with YouTube. And when you embed, how you can change the look and feel of the embedded video. And that embedded video, by the way, auto senses the device you're on. So if you're on an iPad, it will deliver video that's just an MPEG-4 automatically. And if you're on an old browser, even though they'll probably slap you around with a warning message, if you're on an old browser and you can only deliver and play Flash videos, it'll deliver that to you. And so Google's done some really interesting things with video. And, I've been thinking about what they're going to do, you know, because they've been toying with live streaming on YouTube and they've been toying with content and all of that. And they had a great quarter. They also blew out their quarter, even though 97% of their revenue is from advertising. I don't know, the Google TV didn't really take off. And I mean, do you think that Android will become more of a video platform than it is now, and it doesn't really matter if Apple buys Hulu? What do you think, Phil?
I think that he's probably not around right now. I think that you know, Google TV is sort of like Apple TV is an experiment, and they're going to change it to a degree that we'll probably get some level of success, but it'll be it's not clear that that's going to ever be a big business for Google.
Really?
They're doing a lot of different things, and you know, they have to be in that space to continue to sell advertising. And that's how, you know, that's why they did Android and they've open sourced it and give it away free and all that. It's just right. So they can embed their advertising in it. So, you know, we'll see what they come up with on the TV side. But both Apple and Google have not been hugely successful there. Apple, in the last year or so, with their newer device and lower price point, has sold a lot more of them. But you still don't hear a lot about it. You know, it's not like, you know, it's kind of funny because earlier this week, Roku came up with their new updated models, and there was some play on that. And there wasn't a lot of talk about Apple TV at that point, which you'd think, you know, Apple TV is a major competitor of Roku.
Well, except for Tim Cook, you know, the COO at Apple said once again, or maybe it was Jobs that said it on the earnings call. I just read the transcript, but it talked about how it's still a hobby business. They're still positioning it as a hobby rather than a mainstream kind of product. I don't know. It's just, I love the little Apple TVs. We bought a second one, and mainly we bought it because of the ability to use AirPlay, which Apple's licensing to consumer electronics companies and other device manufacturers. So you can literally just press a button and send video and audio to your TV through the Apple TV, which is awesome.
Sort of a sling box sort of thing. Is that what that is?
It's a what?
Yeah. Like a sling box sort of thing?
Yeah, kind of, in a way.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you can play games and stuff too, right?
Yeah, and then with the new iPad 2, you can actually show your screen without plugging it in. So there's some real advantages to it, but...
it's interesting that, you know, that the mobile with tablets and with devices like Apple TV, that Apple could get into, you know, the console gaming business just because of the way that they've connected everything up.
And that would make a lot of sense, I think. Yeah. Let's talk about Google Plus for just a moment then. And
oh God. Yeah. We have to do that.
We have to do that because of all the buzz about that. Well, I mean, okay. So Google confirmed 10 million users last week.
Yeah.
And there's a big...
It's supposed to be 30 million now, though.
Really? I haven't seen that. Okay.
Yeah, I put a story in the show notes.
Okay.
Yep.
About how there's now 30 million in 3 weeks.
Wow. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And the big thing was the brand pages on Google Plus, and now Google's come out and admitted that they screwed up.
I don't think Google
screwed up.
It's they're smart guys. So why, I don't understand why they, you know, they could just say, hey, these things aren't made for brands. Don't do it.
Yeah.
But if you do it, don't delete them. It's crazy.
Yeah. Well, I got to tell you, I don't know if they screwed up. There's part of me that would kind of hope that it wouldn't be, brands on a social network. Not that I don't think brands should have a presence in social network, because I do. I think they really should. But I think they should have it in somebody's persona. I mean, I would much rather follow or engage with somebody from a company than a company.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I wouldn't mind, like, I know that Cashmore changed Mashables to, you know, Pete Cashmore for Mashable rather than just Mashable. It's still the same feed, but I think Google Plus is going to get onto that as well. But I don't know. First and foremost, I think Google Plus, back up, guys. It ain't the biggest thing since sliced bread yet. You know, it's still it still is no Facebook.
So. Well, our pal Julio, you know, is doing a story on it and doing a story on the whole social fatigue thing and social overload. And I will tell you that as much as I think Google Plus is really cool, is yet another sinkhole of time, potentially, if I spend a lot of time looking at it and doing things with it. I know you've jumped in with both feet, Tim. I really love what Google has done with Google Plus, but I look at all the other stuff that I'm involved in and doing, and I just think, oh my God, do I really want to start investing a whole bunch of time in Google Plus and you know, building a following and so on and so forth for either myself or also encouraging my wife to get in and start to do it for the business.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciated your loyalty to MySpace, you know, when Facebook came out and we were all on Facebook and you just said, no, I'm staying on MySpace.
I was never on. No, I did not.
And then you finally had to come to Facebook.
I did not. Tim's telling a fib.
No, it's it's the next big thing. And
what is MySpace?
No, Google Plus.
I don't know.
May or may not win. A lot of people think it's going to kill Twitter, actually, which is kind of interesting.
Well, see, that's I suppose because they're saying I can immerse myself more in Google Plus. I don't have the 140 character limit. And see, that's what I think is special about Twitter. Is it because it has a 140 character limit? And that's what it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be these short bursts of interaction. It's not supposed to be, I can see my blog on Twitter. I can link to my blog on Twitter, but I don't want to see the whole damn thing.
Well, you know what's interesting? Well, let me just jump in with this because I had a conversation about a buddy of mine whose grandfather did 16 millimeter movie films back in the 30s. And he and I were talking about that compared to how we can take video now and run cameras for an hour and doesn't cost you anything. And back then the film and the development cost a lot. So they would take very, very short snippets, and how every single snippet they took was significantly more meaningful than, an hour of your kid sleeping when they're a baby, which you can do on videotape or now digitally. And I think it's the same thing with Twitter. I love the brevity because it really forces you to say what you're going to say in a very, very short period of time. And I find myself already on Google Plus, when I'm responding to somebody, I'm pontificating sometime 4, 5, 6 paragraphs, like I did with Julio when he was asking for feedback on stuff, and I gave it to him. So the comment was, like 6 paragraphs long. And I could never do that in Twitter, nor would I even think about doing much responding.
But I think that's where Google Plus really shows its advantage.
Right.
And a lot of people are using it in a blog post kind of a way.
Right.
Okay, it's like a wide open Tumblr? Is that what it is?
Well, it's different than that. Like the Danny Sullivan open letter, that's a post on Google Plus, but it's like a blog post.
Right.
Right? So Google Plus is sort of like, it's a social network, sort of like Facebook. It's a, short messaging system, sort of like Twitter, but it's also sort of like a blog. So I think to me that means that maybe blogs are evolving into more of a social space. And instead of owning a blog on a website, you participate inside of Google Plus.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
I don't know if it's a good thing, but it's an interesting change.
It's a different thing. What I found funny was I was cruising just through my usual feeds and coming across posts like, what is it? Google Plus best practices. Holy crap, this thing's 3 weeks old and we've already got best practices? How does this possibly happen? Is this social media experts looking for something to do?
That's great. That's great. Well, but I can really compare and contrast my friend circle from my family circle. Not the cartoon. I know you love that, Phil, but
I love that.
I know.
Kids never grow up.
They never grow up. Yeah.
Really, but for Christ's sake, grow up.
But I've invited in the family circle about 40 people, 10 of whom I know have Google accounts.
And none of them have joined.
Couple of them emailed me and say, what is this and why would I care and why do I want to do this? And they're the ones who are the most active on Facebook. So,
I'm still amazed because for the last 2 years, at least 2 years, I've always said to engage with real people, all you need is text messaging and Facebook. I've been saying that for 2 years and it seems like it's still the real people anyway, text messaging and Facebook.
Yeah.
I mean, do you guys disagree that that's still the most widely used interaction?
Oh yeah, no, it is.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that it's going to be in 2 years though.
Well, and here's the other thing too.
Kind of amazed. I've been saying it for 2 years and it's still kind of holding true.
Well,
I mean, yeah, Twitter's been around for 2 years, and it's still, real people still don't use Twitter on a regular basis. They know of Twitter, but they don't use it. They know celebrities use it.
Well, I'll tell you though, I've had, I have met, quote unquote, virtually so many people who have started following me on Twitter, and some of them I've, you know, sent a thank you back. Hey, thanks for the follow. And just as simple as that. And then it's, we've gone back and forth a couple of times, and I've engaged with some people on that, that are truly thought leaders in certain areas, you know.
What do they do for a living though? When you talk to them, I mean, what are they within the tech space and the interactive space and the innovation space?
Almost exclusively. Yeah. Although there are,
you're not tweeting your plumber, right?
No.
Yeah.
No. So to your point, or they are people that have practices or consultancies or, you know, are in a company and they're in charge of, you know, fill in the blank, product management or social connections or they're in human resources or whatever. So they've got very specific motivations for being engaged with social media and trying to figure it out. But it's kind of cool. I mean, it's, you know, it's cool to be able to interact with new people. You know, when you asked the question, Tim, before, or you brought up the you know, is Google Plus the next evolution of blogging? One of the things that I saw immediately was how I would absolutely love a WordPress plugin or some way to use an RSS feed in Google Plus so I could publish a post from WordPress and have the image automatically shrunk and have that in Google Plus.
Yeah, they really haven't.
Is there not a plugin for that yet?
No, they haven't really done anything to bring in, pipe in external content.
Yeah. Is there an API? Google Plus. Is there an API for Google Plus or not?
I think there is, but it hasn't been, they haven't published it yet.
Okay.
So I think at some point there will be things like that, but right now you have to publish everything within Google Plus.
Yep. Well, the last thing I wanted to just touch on was the Microsoft earnings, because Microsoft also released their earnings and you know, like any good press release, touted how well they're doing and so on. And then the New York Times does an article about how Microsoft posted that 30% increase in profit, but sales of Windows are weak. And then they went on to talk about how it's the second consecutive quarter that Microsoft's Windows revenue has fallen because of weakness in PC sales. So of course, because that's due to tablets. And then their whole thing with the partnership with Nokia, that Nokia said on Thursday that its smartphone sales fell 32% in the quarter. And the decline shows eroding demand for Nokia's products and the difficulty Microsoft faces in competing against Apple and Google. So that brings up the question, is it a two-horse race? I mean, is it between Apple and Google and Microsoft? Is this also ran that's way, way, way back? Or are they the dark horse and maybe could sprint ahead at the finish line and you know, maybe even be a nose ahead?
Yes.
Well, if you look behind the earnings, though, Microsoft's earnings, they're doing really well selling enterprise licenses for Windows. Okay. So Windows 7 is a success from an enterprise perspective, and that's what's really carrying the company. Mm-hmm. On a consumer basis, they outside of the Xbox, they really aren't doing anything. Their Windows Phone 7 is not successful, and it's unclear whether or not the combination with Nokia will turn that around or not. I don't know. It might be because Nokia has such a large international business, but here in the US, I just can't see them making up the difference or making up the distance that they have to.
Okay.
So I think what we're going to see is Microsoft is going to be more of an enterprise software company. They will do some things in the consumer space, but it will be sort of like what HP is doing in the consumer space, which will be you know, less exciting than what Apple and Google are doing.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, Microsoft as a company, though, is very sound and is doing really well. Now is the time for them to kind of come up and either come up with a strategy to compete here or to decide what they're going to do, you know, as far as focusing their business.
They'll be announcing Microsoft Plus soon. So
Bing Plus.
Bing Plus. That's it. Bing Plus. Yeah.
Well, I talked to a potential new client yesterday, and the chairman.
Do you want to drop their name just in case that it might help you get that job?
No, Phil. But the chairman is all Mac, and the company is all PC. And they've got a mix of XP and Win 7, and they're going to move to Win 7. And so, you know, I look at that, and this is not a huge company, but I look at that, and to your point about enterprise, is that it's pretty clear that still is a huge area, and mainly because most of the good financial services products, it's all Windows. I know that we use QuickBooks on Windows because basically the Mac OS 10 version blows, and I don't want to run Parallels on a machine to run our accounting, and so there are huge reasons, and I'm running Win 7 on our main bookkeeping box, and it's a good OS, works well, it's fast.
Yep, well, and if you look at PC hardware, you can get a really nice laptop for like $600.
Yeah, right. Really nice laptop.
Really nice, right. As opposed to what Apple did, where they took out their entry level, their $900 MacBook.
Yeah,
right?
They dropped the MacBook. Yeah,
and now they force you into either an $1,100 MacBook Pro or a 11-inch like you've got, Steve.
Yeah,
which is I think $1,000 for an underpowered machine. And so there's a huge market for students and a lot of other real people where, you know, the difference between $600 and $1,200 is a lot of money.
It is a lot of money.
You know, Windows 7 is not that bad of an operating system.
Well, and this is a strategy that Apple has always had. They've always been the high price leader, the top shelf. I think that they want to continue to do that. So they don't want to come up with an inexpensive Mac. They want to still be that, people that really want it have to go after it,
Right. But I'm not talking about some junky, HP.
Right. No, I agree.
Thing. I'm talking about Lenovo, which makes probably as good or better quality to what Apple does. And you can get a really good Lenovo for $600-$700.
You know what, Tim?
It's every bit as good as a MacBook Pro from a hardware perspective.
Sure. I've had at Vignette and then later at Lawson, I had ThinkPads and I had four different versions during that 7 years. And I got to tell you that today, even now, is the best laptop I've ever owned.
Yeah.
I should say.
I had one back in the day too. It ran NT4.
Oh God.
Which was great. But the only thing I didn't understand about that is that weird red, sticky trackpaddy thing that was in the keyboard.
Yeah.
I never got that thing.
I loved
sticky trackpaddy thing.
It was a little nub.
This weird nubby thing.
Yeah, a little eraser. It was like this little eraser. Supposedly use thing.
It as a, and they still have it, I think.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
It's crazy, but anyway.
Yeah. No, I liked it. But, to your point is we have a good friends and the mom just went and got her doctorate, and so she exited the workforce. So for several, couple years anyway, and she was commuting to go to school, and it was a real challenge for the family. And they needed a new laptop for their son, who's a friend of my son's, and this boy also wanted to get a smartphone. And he came to the house one day with his new laptop and his new smartphone, and he had a Windows 7 laptop, an HP. That I thought was gorgeous. And also I think he had an HTC Android smartphone. And here he was apologetic about him. And I looked at him and I just grabbed him and his initials Jay. I just said, Jay, look, it's you own awesome product. And oh, by the way, all that matters is you have a smartphone. It doesn't really matter which brand you have. It really doesn't. And I absolutely believe that. And so when you look at the laptop thing, is yes, I'm all Mac, and yes, I love the Mac, and so on and so forth. But to your point, Tim, when you can go out and he did, and they spent $550, they got a $50 rebate on this laptop, and they bought this HP laptop, and it's fast, and it's got my, I think it's got a 360 gig or 320 gig hard drive in it, and it's awesome.
Yeah.
So I
you know, getting back to, you know, the subject, which is, you know, Microsoft, you know, are they kind of out of it? I don't think they are. They need to do some things in the, you know, consumer space to get some more mind share back. But, from an enterprise perspective, and then looking at the corporate earnings, they're doing fine.
Yeah. Great, 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 great. Well, what else is going on? We kind of beat that one, didn't we?
I was going to ask you, Tim, you went to the WordPress users group last night. Did you go to that to see the Gravity Forms presentation?
No, because it's next Thursday.
Oh, it's next Thursday. I apologize. I thought that was last night.
Well, Tim corrected me too, because I said,
yeah.
Yeah.
No, but I will go next Thursday.
Woohoo!
Yeah, I want to go as well.
Yeah, I don't have a time machine where I can go into the future.
Boy, you know,
then,
if you had
to come back and then come back and report on the future.
Do you have one that goes into the past so I cannot install Lion? Is that?
Oh, come on.
Well, I'm sorry.
You poor baby.
Hey, I've got the discs for Snow Leopard if you need to go back.
Okay. Well, I've got them too, but I just
Well, okay. So that's next Thursday, and then
that's next Thursday.
Cocoa MSP kickoff party down at the new Minneapolis facility is next Saturday, and that ought to be great. A lot of fun.
Good.
So do they have that? Have you guys been down there? Do they have it all fixed up?
No, I haven't been down there.
Been down there either. Well, I know all their furniture showed up and it was in boxes, and they had to pull it all apart.
The furniture was in boxes. What the hell are they thinking about?
It's knockdown furniture.
I was just kidding.
I know. Okay. All right. So what else is going on? You know.
When did they get their furniture? Because I, you know, that's the sort of stuff I love to do. I love putting that stuff together.
I don't know, like last week, I think.
You should call me on these things.
Yeah. Well, follow their blog.
I'll go down there with my little Allen wrench and just go nuts.
There you go. Well, I will come back to a comment that you know, we kind of talked about last week, which is, what the hell's going on this summer? I mean, the stuff that is just flying out here is unbelievable. I've never experienced, you know, besides the fact that it was so hot out that I felt like I was walking into a sauna. But, you know, the tech stuff that's coming out is just, it's unbelievable.
How so? Give us some examples there, Steve.
Well, okay, compared to last June and July, I mean, the biggest thing was the new iPhone, the iPhone 4. And there was that wacky
iPad thing too, wasn't it? Or
no, that was earlier in the year in April.
Oh, okay.
But that was really the big story for the summer last year. And now, I mean, just look at all this stuff, you know, in terms of revenues for these companies and, you know, Google Plus and new Macs and OS X Lion and all the stuff that is just flying out and everybody doing stuff, you know, Twitter going public. And
it was kind of funny last night. I was watching the NBC Nightly News, and I don't think I've seen these guys since, probably, you know, the last, you know, the tech bubble. And it was the guys, they're doing stories now on the guys that are 26 years old wearing the, you know, the blue sport coats and the black pants and the black shoes and the jeans, those young kids that are going to be multimillionaires again. So yeah, I don't know if that's an omen of things to come or what, but they're doing more stories about that in the legacy media outlets. So.
Yeah. Well, all right, gentlemen, as always,
it's always fun to chat with you guys.
Yeah.
Hopefully something happens next week.
Oh no! Next week we've got some. We'll have some guests. It'll be a wonderful show. I can guarantee you.
And maybe Graham will be back.
Maybe so. Right. And then I know that he has cash to send all of us, so that's good, right, Graham? Wherever you are.
Yeah, right. All right. Yeah, right. Send those buckets of money.
That's right. What about social media breakfast?
Social media breakfast is on the 29th of July. It's about nonprofits. So, Nicole Harrison, who is Social Nicole, is going to moderate that. So, and that's, Commemorative Air Force Minnesota Wing. That's where it's at. That's interesting.
Oh, that'll be cool.
Yeah.
If you've ever been there, it's a great facility.
Very cool.
Excellent.
Have a great week, guys.
See you on the next Minivade Gang podcast.